Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Had a few seconds of having to futz around with the streaming interfaces, but it worked, and I'm here, and you're there, and it's the 26th day of May, 2017. The last full week of May, 2017, comes to a close, and it's Friday on the front porch. One of my favorite days of the week, because we generally have some Jim Dandy conversations on Friday on the front porch. Quick happy birthday greetings going out to Michael in Madison. There's always something fun going on in Madison or the general thereabouts environs. And I'm hoping Michael has found where they are so he can adequately celebrate his birthday. Shoot. Big old tall glass of spotted cow would be plenty for me. But Michael has the advantage of being able to select from the vast Disneyland of beer that is Madison, Wisconsin. So, like I said, it's Friday on the front porch. And until about an hour from now we fire it up, well, there will be a madcap, wacky, multimedia extravaganza taking place in the Horn chat room. If you can cope with Java, then you too can be part of it. Just go to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, and then pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you'll be right there. You'll be met by Anatole, Jug of Punch, Squeaky, Steve from Georgia Stan, VT Blom, all capably moderated by longtime and veteran, indefatigable chat room, veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave. And it must be kind of nice in Northern California today. It's actually kind of nice here in Appalachistan. Very nice weed eater in my hand, trying to... Of the jungle that is the acre at present. I had a programming question with it being a holiday. Well, I don't take holidays very much. On Monday. Oh, wait a minute. Or Monday. Yeah, I know, we're getting buffering on both. And it's some world-class-looking buffering, too. Okay, I was grabbing a quick snapshot of the buffering on the interface. Still no idea what causes that. It's mightily frustrating. Um, Yeah, I know. VT Balam says, "Arg, buffering already." Well, there was, yeah, and there was buffering on both streams. I'm sorry. Anyway, it is Friday on the front porch, and here in about 50 minutes or so, we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and see what's on everybody's minds. This is, of course, a listener-supported broadcast effort, and, you know, it's listeners like you who make it possible, including our subscribers. And overnight, thank you to Karen in Colorado. Thank you to Melton in California. And to our buddy Jay, somewhere in the desert. As well as to, birthday boy, Michael, in Madison. And as a result of that, we only have $200. I'm not $200, but we only have $277. $277 to raise for the evening. Okay. $277 to go. One at 277. 10 at 27, 27 people at 10, and beyond that, this not without a calculator, no. So, you know, that's all at PayPal. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, and with the understanding that that mailbox will probably not be checked for a few more days, because Boss Man Wayne is still recovering from gallbladder surgery. The mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. So that's how that all works. Now, I had a special request from a member of the community. Matt in Humboldt County, California. Matt has fallen on some hard times. He said, "I know how difficult fundraising for the program can be, so I had to think long and hard before writing you. However, I find that I must do some fundraising of my own and am reaching out to the Horn community in that regard. As you probably know, I'm Matt from Humboldt County, California. I've been a longtime listener. Called into the show a time or two, donated on occasion. Matt says, I had several unexpected expenses the last couple of months and now find myself with a bank account about $1,000 in the hole. Since regular bills have to be paid next month, the cycle will continue if I don't knock out some of this shortfall. In a way, it's like the situation you find yourself in at the end of a week when you don't reach your fundraising goal. What I'm asking is this, Matt says. I'd like you to mention this to the Horn family at the top of today's program and for the next few days. You may simply read this entire email if that is the best way to do it. If the good folks in the Horn community can pitch in $5, $10, whatever they can send it via PayPal to... I tell you what, if y'all want to help Matt, write me an email. I'll write back. I'll give you his email address. There are trolls out there, and there are unsavory types. And if you will write to me, I will provide you the email address for Matt for that goes to his PayPal. Matt says, since my lack of vision makes interacting with social media impossible, I'd also ask you to post this request to the various Horn Facebook and Twitter feeds. I'll try to call into Friday on the Front Porch tonight on the stress line since I can afford the necessary mic to... use with Skype. Sorry I have to do this, but I'm really having some economic anxiety. Yeah, the real kind. And I understand. So if you would like to help Matt, send me an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Put help Matt in the subject line. And I will send you his email address so that you can then do the PayPal thing. Okay. So it is, in fact, Friday on the front porch. If you've never participated in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that will come around in about 45 minutes time, well, you need to get on Skype and send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and he'll show you the breadcrumb trail. And Sparky will help you into the group. It does, as Matt notes, it helps if you've got a headset and microphone, because otherwise you wind up with booming echoes coming back that sort of deletes, it makes the call experience and the group conversation experience a little less than, shall we say, salutary. Yeah. So that's coming up in about the 45 minutes. And we'll see what's on everybody's minds. All right, where do we begin this evening? If you don't mind, I'll take some time away from the gigantic screw-up that is the current occupant of the White House and whatever embarrassment has taken place today. And we'll get back here a little closer to home. Oh, by the way, before I get started, I've had another email from Brain. This one was in all caps. Whoever is writing the Brain emails is trying too hard, or else if Brain is a real person, Brain is done to a tender turn. do you want a quick show of hands in the chat room or over on Skype or email or whatever? Do you want to hear Brain's latest? I'm disinclined to share it simply because, whoever is providing us, like I said, the Brain emails, is just trying too hard at this point. Although I must admit, they're still pretty funny. Well, that's not an answer. Anatole says, "Forgive Brain, Mr. Bob." It's not a forgive or not forgive situation. I simply ask, does the Horn Family Community Congregation... Okay, we've got one vote yes. We've got one vote no. That's two votes yes. Chug-a-Punch says, no more brain surgery. Steve from Georgistan says, I could use a laugh. And of all the quick-witted... what? Asa? No opinion? Anatole, still not giving me a yes or no. Welcome, brain, to the fold. Brains, fold, folds of the... Yep. Yeah, it's clever. It's clever, Anatole. Okay, well, we'll just put... VT Blom now says more brains. Steve from Georgia Stan, I voted yes. Duncan's vote counts for two. Well, right, because he can. Actually, it counts for three because he's a spacing guild master and he can vote from three separate locations. Okay, we'll go with it. Okay, Neil says I'll go with yes. You guys. Yeah, all right. All right. Again, it's in all caps. That means I have to scream at you. Fuck you, Bob Kincaid! Brain is using his good words. He's using that mouth he uses to kiss his mommy with. You fucking bastard! You want to call me a Trumpanzee? No, Brain. I don't have to want to. I am calling you a Trumpanzee because you self-admit that you voted for Trump, Brain. That makes you a Trumpanzee. It doesn't make you an airplane pilot. Or an astronaut. So I don't have to want to. You just are, Brain. Hope Trump gets reelected and sends the stormtroopers after you. See, like I said, whoever is doing the brain notes has gone overboard. Stormtroopers sends the stormtroopers. Afri you. If Brain is real, like I said, he's done to a tender turn, and he's down to typing with one finger. No, Neil, in the chat room, not stormtroopers, stormtroopers. You're short a P there, buddy. Sends the stormtroopers Afri, A-F-R-E-E-U. I am furious. I could punch you in your fast gut. Ah, Asa is a clever one. I have a conspiracy theory, Bob. I think you, Bob Kincaid, are the author of the brain emails. I think it's a plot by you to shill for the DNC and drive the conversation towards putting Snuggly Bear Pooty Poot up on the cross. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Whatever you're doing is working, by the way. Keith says, go ahead and do it, Bob. Get it over with. It's kind of like taking off a Band-Aid. It is kind of like that, Keith. It's exactly kind of that. Okay, well, we're into it now. So you got that last part. I am so furious I could punch you in your fast gut. Actually, my motility's been kind of slow of late, but we won't quibble. I'm calling in tonight to debate you and embarrass you in front of your sycophants and expose you for the Hillary Clinton worshiper you are, Bob. And my spell check automatically inserts Brain instead of Brian, you unintelligent Hillary Clinton primary voting neoliberal shill. Wait a minute. Neoliberal! Shill. So you'll note that his spell check automatically inserts Brain instead of Brian. By the way, Brain didn't sign this one because he couldn't count on spell check not to turn it Brian into Brain. Spell check automatically turns Brian into Brain, but his spell check is helpless against Bassrard, Troppers, Afri, and my fast gut. Not quite sure what you're getting at there, Silent R. Lamar. Oh, you guys are not any fun when you start begging. Oh, wait a minute. First cowbell of the evening goes to Lizardo in the chat room. It's irritable brain syndrome. Well played, Lizardo. Well played indeed. Brain has not had his meds today, says Silent R. Lamar. Don't worry. Brain's not going to call in. I know you want him to. I think wherever he's driving right now, Asa in Vancouver would pull his car over on the side of the road and do the Asa happy dance. But no, Brain's not calling in because, and this is just my personal theory, Brain is not real. I got a couple of candidates, but Brain's not real. He's fun, though. Been a long time since I've been called a Bassrard. Hell, and it takes a certain amount of a certain je ne sais derp to complain about being referred to as a Trumpansy when you yourself confess to having voted for Trump. Mm-hmm. So it's a pity we don't have some of that old school public television instrumental music. We could run that and say, "This has been a moment with Brain," and then wait to see what Brain has for us next time. You sycophants, you. No, not Bassrard. Can't you people spell? Bassrard. Bassrard. It's not like I'm not pronouncing it. Daggum. There's Steve from Georgia Stan thinking Bassrard, thinking I'm down there looking for smallmouths or something. I don't have time to do that. If I had any free time, I'd be out mowing grass and weed eating and whatnot. Come on, Steve, get with the program, Bassrard. Everybody knows I use Popeil's Pocket Fisherman. Damn! So that's your... That's your moment with Brain. And we'll move on now. I just don't know how. Well, I do know how, because it's always an easy segue from something stupid to something stupid. It's just dot connecting. And for this, we get to stay right here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cold Trump, Virginia. Stan. And a story from yesterday's Charleston Gazette mail, reported by Aaron Beck, who is becoming intrepid. It concerns a state senator in the West Virginia legislature, which I think just as a proper style manual, Associated Press style book kind of thing, we could start referring to as the hapless West Virginia state legislature, which continues to spend special session money like a drunken sailor. And still can't, and remember, this is a Republican majority legislature. This is a teabagger Trumpanzee legislature, the damn dumb heel. And in Upshur County, which is head on out bound until you get 70, and I-7 up to exit 99, and you loop down the Cloverleaf, or is it a clover? Do you go straight down? Anyway, if you turn eastward on U.S. Route 48, you will be headed toward Buckhannon. B-U-C-K-H-A-N-N-O-N, Buckhannon. Which is the county seat of Upshur County, West Virginia. It's right next to, it is directly east of Lewis County and Weston, where once was the state, I mean, it's what it was called back then. This isn't unpolitically correct or anything. Where once was the state insane asylum. Now they do tours there, haunted insane asylum tours, and if any place could be haunted, I would imagine that's it. But anyway, Upshur County has a population of 24,731 and an unemployment rate of 6.5%. It's the home of West Virginia Wesleyan College, which is not a bad little college at all. And, of course, it, like every other county in West Virginia, is just chock plum full of Trumpanzees. Right. One of those Trumpanzees was sent by a lot of other Trumpanzees, well, a lot for around here, a man named Robert Carnes was sent by the Trumpanzees to do their Trumpanzee work in the legislature of the state of West Virginia. And the issue of health care has been much on the minds of the legislature here, because about 29% of the population, nearly a third, about 29% of the population of the state of West Virginia is on Medicaid. And that number is that high because there's a significant portion of that group who have insurance, health insurance, for the first time in their lives because of the Medicaid expansion included in the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, which the Republicans, the Trumpanzee Congress, desperately wants to destroy and take away. So, in a discussion this past Wednesday about the state budget, there was a colloquy in the Senate of the state of West Virginia between Senator Mike Wilfill and the aforementioned Senator Robert Carnes of Upshur County. The question was asked of Senator Carnes because he had submitted a proposed revenue plan for the state. He took the lead on crafting it and proposing it. It was passed by the Senate this past Wednesday, right before they decided to adjourn, because the House and the Trumpanzee House and the Trumpanzee Senate cannot quite agree on just how weird to be. Although, in his own way, Senator Carnes is lighting a sort of flickering torch in the darkness of enlightenment to lead the way to true stupidity. Mike Woelfel, W-O-E-L-F-E-L, by the way, is a Democrat from Cabell County, and he asked Senator Carnes, the Trumpanzee from Upshur County, if the revenue plan that he had architected took into account what would happen if the Republican Party in Washington succeeds in achieving its fondest dreams and manages to take away Medicaid from those aforementioned 29% of West Virginians who rely on it for their health care. So, Senator Woelfel said, does your budget anticipate that Medicaid hole or those folks are, does your budget anticipate that Medicaid hole, or are those folks just going to be left out there? At which point, trying to sound intelligent-like, Senator Carnes of Upshur County said, my understanding of what the president's proposing is to convert a lot of that into block grants, which gives us a lot more flexibility in terms of how we spend those dollars. This is, of course, the typical ALEC talking point. Gosh, if we can only just block grant the Medicaid money to the states instead of the federal government doling out the money to the states as the money is needed, well, then we can just have ourselves a high old time. And from a Republican standpoint, I guess that's true. Because if Medicaid money is block granted, well, they can use it on just about anything they want to, and it can become a little bit of political sweetening, as the term is used, political rewards, shall we say. And so if the number of people needing Medicaid goes up and there's no more block grant money, well, too bad, hillbilly. You just need to go crawl up a holler and die. Right. As one of those Americans who has no health care, I can say that I understand and sympathize with the stress that this would impose already not particularly healthy West Virginians. Office of Management and Budget, the budget director in the White House, McKinney of South Carolina, Stan. Mick Mulvaney says that we don't diabetes care anyway because that's the fault of the people who have diabetes. Compassionate conservatism. So, parroting the talking point, Senator Carnes of says we'll get some block grant, a lot more flexibility in terms of how we spend those. Okay, that's right in line with the talking points. But then he wanted to make sure that his fellow hillbillies knew what he was talking about. here at 22 minutes before the hour, I suggest you reach up on the shelf and pull down your hockey puck and get two or three good long strips of duct tape to go around your head to, so that you won't disturb the neighbors with your screaming, your moaning, and your shouting when you hear what comes next. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here's the example Senator Carnes gave. My understanding of what the president's proposing is to convert a lot of that into block grants, which gives us a lot more flexibility in terms of how we spend those dollars. For example, we won't necessarily have to cover transgender surgery. We could choose to treat the child with cancer instead. This is called a pregnant pause. This is something straight out of Mark Twain. Particularly his short story, How I Edited an Agricultural Journal. In which, having written some real live, genuine frontier gibberish, Twain writes of the time that he edited an agricultural paper. And he says, in about a half an hour, an old gentleman with a flowing beard and a fine but rather austere face entered the office, sat down at my invitation. He seemed to have something on his mind. He took off his hat and set it on the floor and got out of it a red silk handkerchief and a copy of our paper. He put the paper on his lap, and while he polished his spectacles with his handkerchief, he said, "Are you the new editor?" I said I was. "Have you ever edited an agricultural paper before?" "No," I said, "this is my first attempt." "Very likely. Have you had any experience in agriculture practically?" "No, I believe I have not." "Some instinct told me so," said the old gentleman. A little bit of text transpires, and he says, "Then this old person got up and tore his paper all into small shreds and stamped on them and broke several things with his cane and said, 'I did not know as much as a cow,' and then went out and banged the door after him and, in short, acted in such a way that I fancied he was displeased about something. Pretty soon after this, a long cadaverous creature with lanky locks hanging down to his shoulders and a weak stubble bristling from the hills and valleys of his face darted within the door and halted motionless with a finger on lip and head and body bent in listening attitude. No sound was heard. Still he listened, no sound. Then he turned the key in the door and came elaborately tiptoeing toward me till he was within long reach distance of me, when he stopped and, after scanning my face with intense interest for a while, drew a folded copy of our paper from his bosom and said, 'There, you wrote that. Read it to me, quick. Relieve me. I suffer.' I read, and as the sentences fell from my lips, I could see the relief come. I could see the drawn muscles relax and the anxiety go out of the face, and rest and peace steal over the features like a merciful moonlight over a desolate landscape. Some text ensues. The excited listener sprang toward me to shake hands and said, 'There, there, that'll do. I know I'm all right now, because you've read it just as I did, word for word. But, stranger, when I first read it this morning, I said to myself, I never believed it before, notwithstanding my friends kept me under watch so strict. But now I believe I am crazy. And with that, I fetched a howl that you might have heard 2 miles and started out to kill somebody, because, you know, I knew it would come to that sooner or later, and so I might as well begin. Read one of them paragraphs over again so as to be certain, and then I burned my house down and started. I've crippled several people, have got one fellow up a tree where I can get at him if I want him, but I thought I'd call in here as I passed along to make the thing perfectly certain, and now it is certain, and I tell you it's lucky for the chap that's in the tree. I should have killed him sure as I went back. Goodbye, sir, goodbye. You've taken a great load off my mind. My reason has stood the strain of one of your agricultural articles, and I know that nothing can ever unseat it now. Goodbye, sir." Kind of how I felt reading that. And, of course, I have no doubt whatsoever that Senator Trumpanzee Carnes is a Christian because he thinks that in West Virginia, we provide state-funded gender reassignment surgery for trans people at the expense of children who suffer with cancer untreated. That'd get me to putting a few people up a tree. As Twain says, I felt a little uncomfortable about the cripplings and arsons this person had been entertaining himself with, for I could not help feeling remotely accessory to them. I don't suppose good Senator Carnes has any such feelings of remorse or misgiving, for he is certain in the monumental magnificence of his ignorance. Oh yes. Oh yes. There seems to be the word from Senator Carnes seems to be having a similar effect in the chat room. Silent R. Lamar says, okay, I'm on my way to left field. Somebody stop me, please, before I get hurt. Send the boys with the big butterfly net, please. Yeah. And the folks back home there in Upshur County are just proud as punch of their Trumpanzee Senator Carnes for standing up for the little cancer children and making sure, wanting to make sure that they can have their cancer treatment instead of giving free surgery to them transgenders. And apparently it did no great good, his response, did no great good for Senator Wolfel either, who responded to the words, for example, we won't necessarily have to cover transgender surgery, we can choose to treat the child with cancer instead. Senator Wolfel said, see, I thought we were having a rational discussion, and you want to talk about transgender surgery. That's enough, thank you. At which point, Senator Mike Romano, a Democrat from Harrison County, just a mite north of Upshur County, but it's got a town in it, so of some size, to wit, Clarksburg and Bridgeport. So there's a decent chance there's almost enough IQ points to rub together to get a spark. Senator Romano simply said, I'd like to know how many transgender surgeries there were in West Virginia last year. See, that's one of them tricky liberal Democrats wanting to know how many transgender surgeries was done in West Virginia last year. Well, I have an answer for ye. None. We don't do such heathen abomination surgeries here in West Virginia. Because Mountaineers is always free, by God. Mountaineers is always free, and they's either boys or girls, and they go to the right potty. And we don't do adidectomies here in West Virginia. God bless it. But he's being tricky. Because, see, it could be that since we don't do your transgender surgeries here in West Virginia, that just means that they gets to go somewhere else, like over there into Virginia. I bet they do transgender surgeries in Virginia. And West Virginia pays for it with West Virginia Medicaid dollars. See how they do it? See how they do it? They think they're so smart. Mr. Smarty Pants, smart people. Yeah. Asa, and very, very, very good comparison. Asa reminds me, says, West Virginia Senator Carnes reminds me of Texas State representing Jody Laubenberg from way back in 2013, and I quote, the emergency rooms, they have what's called rape kits.
that the woman can get cleaned out, basically, like a DNC. Well, that's a little more complicated talky words than what Representative Carnes done used, but I understand the comparison, and I think it is well taken. Aaron Beck, the reporter for the Gazette, says that number is unclear, the number of transgender surgeries there were in West Virginia last year. But according to DHHR spokeswoman Allison Adler, Medicaid doesn't pay for them. This is a non-covered service, she wrote in an email Thursday. But having been proven to be a complete and utter goddamn dimwit, Senator Carnes was not done certifying it. He went on Twitter and described transgender medical procedures, sexual reassignment surgeries, as quote-unquote disfigurements, and said that such surgeries are a matter of, again, a quote, indulging mental illness. Now, there are a number of us who are on Twitter. If you would care to let Senator Robert Carnes know what a goddamned four-square, brass-bound, jumping Jesus idiot he is, you can find him on Twitter at Senator Carnes, K-A-R-N-E-S. He describes himself as West Virginia State Senator, 11th District, constitutional conservative, jobs, growth, education, liberty. Mm-hmm. And you're free to let this jackass know exactly what you think. We have some members of the trans community here among the Horn Family Community Congregation. And you might want to reach out to some organizations that advocate on behalf of the trans community and let them know of the monumental degree of stupid that obtains here in the Mountain State. And it's not just stupid. It's bigotry. Well, that's an interesting question, Silent R. Lamar. Hey, Bob, I have a question. If you're not the parents, how would you know what sex they were, what their gender was? Well, see, that's because of secret Jesus X-ray vision. So embarrassing. So embarrassing. But once again, let's understand, it's not just Senator Carnes that's embarrassing. It's the goddamned fools who sent him to Charleston who are all the more so. By the way, for anyone who's interested in knowing, the American Psychological Association as touching upon Carnes' allegation that all trans people are mentally ill, said many transgender people do not experience their gender as distressing or disabling, which implies that identifying as transgender does not constitute a mental disorder. For these individuals, the significant problem is finding affordable resources such as counseling, hormone therapy, medical procedures, and the social support necessary to freely express their gender identity and minimize discrimination. Now, your Senator Robert Carnes there, he would be a prime example of the aforementioned discrimination. And he's got a history, Carnes does. He's a big proponent of West Virginia's version of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which, of course, is a bit of a non sequitur because religious freedom would have to be not in existence in order for it to be restored. And I can tell you that, please, for once, I'm asking you simply to believe me, that you cannot swing a dead cat in West Virginia, or a live one, but the live one won't much appreciate it, without hitting a church. From great big mega churches, I mean, not on the Texas size of mega churches, mind you, from mega churches and evangelical cults of personality, right down to the little tiny white clabbered church in the Wildwood with their Easter sign that says IRNI, which of course we all know stands for I'm Right Nailed In. We do not have a religious freedom problem in almost level West by Cold Trump Virginia Stan. Senator Carnes is also a big proponent of a potty bill, Senator Carnes being deeply, deeply concerned with how people and where people go poo-poo and pee-pee, because apparently he was potty trained at gunpoint and is still rather fascinated with those bodily functions. Yeah. That's just a start. Oh, yes, that's just a start. Now, me, I'm kind of wondering. This is just a general note. If anybody listening to the program knows Paul Krugman, whose writings I often respect and for whom I have considerable admiration, would you please get a message to him that Bob said, stop it! Stop it, Paul. Can I call you Paul? Stop it. Mike in Cascadia put me on to a column of Mr. Krugman's today. The title of the column in the New York Times is, It's All About Trump's Contempt. Wait a minute. Note from Matt in San Francisco. I don't know what it's like to be a trans person, and I don't need to. I just need to listen and seek to understand. I do know what it's like to be an asshole, and that politician, Senator Carnes, is an asshole who just needs to sit down and shut up. Well, see, a lot of us feel that way, Matt, but if you tell Senator Carnes to sit down and shut up, he will respond that you are persecuting him for his faith in Jeebus. Never realizing, of course, that you're simply asking him to sit down and shut up and stop proving to the world what a goddamned asshole he is. I wonder what would happen, Matt being in San Francisco and all, makes me wonder. What would happen if a Senator Carnes stood up in the state senate of California, since he's a state senator here? We'll make him a state senator there. What would happen if Senator Carnes stood up in the state senate of California and declared that Medicaid could save children with cancer by not paying for transgender surgeries? What would happen in a state of some enlightenment like California or perhaps Oregon or Washington or Massachusetts? What would happen? Would they tar and feather him? Would they run him out of town on a rail? Would they sit him down and just give him a stern talking to? Or would the entire body just erupt in paroxysms of laughter that would paralyze state government until days later the laughter finally ceased? I don't know. I do not know. Whose column, please understand, is not particularly objectionable save for one sentence. He talks, again, as many liberal, progressive thought leaders have, about how perplexing it is that people like people in West Virginia voted in such monumental numbers for an obvious huckster like Trump. You know, people like West Virginians or, you know, Brain. And he says, you may recall Trump's remark during the campaign that I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters. Well, he hasn't done that, at least so far. He is, however, betting that he can break every promise he made to the working class voters who put him over the top and still keep their support. Can he win that bet? I don't know if that's a rhetorical question or not from Mr. Krugman. My answer is yes. Yes, he can win that bet. Because he can do anything he wants to, as long as he doesn't turn black or act like he gives a rat's ass about people of color in this country. Krugman talks about his deep dive into fraud with his budget proposal. He moves on to talk about how on the campaign trail, he said he wouldn't touch Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security, and everybody would have even better coverage than they already had. And then he says, to make this concrete, let's talk about West Virginia, which went Trump by more than 40 percentage points, topped only by Wyoming. What did West Virginians think they were voting for? I still think West Virginia is the Trumpiest state in the union. Screw Wyoming. I mean, today I saw a vehicle with a bumper sticker on it said, Trump, Mike Mark right again. And then in a little little decal in the corner of the rusty busty SUV, there was a little stick figure tableau showing stick figures having sex. And beneath that was the caption, simply said, fuck your stick figure family. And on the opposite side from the Trump bumper sticker, a bumper sticker advertising a local tattoo parlor. Sorry, sneeze break. So, Paul Krugman wants to talk about West Virginia. He refers to the fact that 19% of West Virginians are on food stamps, 29% on Medicaid. More than 4% of the population, the highest share in the nation, receives Social Security disability. Remember, that's the Social Security disability that the that the Trump budget wants to take away. A high fraction of the population consists of people who suffer from chronic diseases like diabetes. And then he says, and just to be clear, we're talking about white people here. At 93% white, West Virginia is one of the most minority and immigrant-free states in America. Shit, you know, we can have our own Klan rally without even organizing. But then he gets down to this. He says, what would happen to West Virginia if all these Trump policies went into effect? Basically, it would be apocalyptic. Hundreds of thousands would lose health insurance, medical debt, and untreated conditions would surge. There would be an explosion in extreme poverty, including a lot of outright hunger. And hospitals would close, and clinics would close, and pharmacies would close. Yeah. Then he points out, like I said, it's a good article. Now, to be fair, the Trump budget would protect West Virginians from the ravages of the estate tax, which affects around 20, that's right, 20 of the state's residents each year. 20 people, not 20,000, 20 people. 20. But there's one little sentence in here. That made me want to tear at my clothing and bark at the as-yet-unrisen moon. And that's because you can't write about Trumpansies in West Virginia without saying the word coal. So what did the state's residents think they were voting for? Partly, presumably, they supported Trump because he promised, falsely, of course, that he could bring back the well-paying coal mining jobs of yore. Mm-hmm. And then he says, it's also about jobs. And then the sentence that gets all kinds of under my skin. Coal isn't coming back. Now, if you are a big-brained, highfalutin, world-renowned economist, and you write a line like coal isn't coming back in relation to a state like West Virginia, what you are saying is that in West Virginia, coal is gone. Because it's like that old saying, if you leave me, can I come too? Or, how can I miss you if you won't go away? Coal isn't coming back. Well, coal has to be gone before it can come back. And the problem, and this is one of those problems that afflicts well-meaning progressive liberal intellectuals, the problem is that coal is still right here. You know, because you listen to this program, the blasts go off every day. The great toxic clouds of microfine silica dust goes up in the air, and even though it's microfine and ultrafine and fine, and it is still impacted by the force of gravity, which, although the physicists tell us gravity is a relatively weak force, has, for us, we denizens of this little blue-green time machine hurtling through the universe, rather profound effects. Because in Appalachia, the dust clouds go up, and then they come down. And when they come down, people breathe it. And when they breathe it, they take it into their bodies, and their bodies have no way of dealing with it or protecting against it. And it begins making things inside their bodies like cancer and heart disease and all manner of birth defects. Science has shown us this. You see. So when Paul Krugman writes, Kolak. He's saying that it's okay on here to go on being here. It's okay to poison hillbillies. And people who agree with him, because after all, the hillbillies voted for Trump, so why the fuck not? And, you know, if you take out the occasional omelet without breaking a few eggs. So, no, really, here you are that writes for Marr and various and sundry others at a time. Please, just for like Paul Krugman down here, I'd love to show him around. I'd love to show him the coal that isn't goddamn gone. The terminals, the prep plants, the active mountaintop removal operation. Yeah, take him up, courtesy of Sal, take him up and fly him over and say, Mr. Krugman, you see down there? Yeah, see all that? That's some of that coal that's gone that you keep writing about that isn't coming back. Yeah. But seriously, lurkers, ask your buddy Paul, just so as to keep me from having to gnaw through another damn hockey puck and have to put in an order to Brother Deacon Asa to send more. Ask him not to write that coal is coming back crap, because that contributes directly to the ongoing poisoning and sickening and diseasing and killing of me and mine. Okie doke. That would be most helpful. Thank you. So I've overshot the hour just a wee bit by about 11 minutes. Like I said, we have $277 to raise this evening. $277. And thus far, we are at zero in what has been a real booger of a month. $277 to go, and it would be nice to end the week on target. And then next week we'll have Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday to finish out and hopefully lick the Lithuanian and nudge the Norsky and move boldly into June. $277 to go. Okay, can we do that? The PayPal button's over at headonradionetwork.com. This is listener-supported, emphasis on the listener-supported part, Conversation Radio. It's about time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is the Horn Molloy Skype Friday on the Front Porch group. Remember, if you want to get in on it, get on Skype and send a contact request to Sparky Dunk. Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk, on Skype, and he'll show you the breadcrumb trail. Me, I'm Bob Kincaid.
trying to keep up a smile that hides a tear. But as the sun goes down, get that empty feeling again.
From somewhere back in the dim and distant 70s, Pablo Cruz and Baby Come Back. Cole isn't coming back, says Paul Krugman. 16 minutes past the hour on this Friday on the front porch on the horn, and let's run straightway over and check in with longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran, Horn Malloy Skype chat group, extraordinary, ordinary, roundtable moderator, Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Kill me with all that introduction some of them these days.
Well, I mean, you stick around long enough that the titles just add up.
Hey, you see that picture in the chat?
I did.
What, last night. Finally got her.
Oh, that's the biggin? That's Mama?
Yeah.
That's Donette?
Yeah. Look like a female to me.
Ha 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 ha.
So the body count stands at 12 now, including her.
The rat body count. And so have you broken it down statistically as to traditional trap versus electrocution?
Yeah, I only got 4 in the electrocution for trapped.
How about gassing and hanging? What's the count on that, Sparky?
I don't know. I'll tell you a story. It's really funny.
Little tiny cigarettes for the rat firing squad. No, go ahead, Sparky.
I got this plastic rat trap from a friend of mine, and I was getting frustrated with using it because every time I bait it and everything, they'd set it off and they'd never catch nothing. So he was going to put in my circle driveway out here. So he finally shows up yesterday. Well, we make arrangements for me to get the gravel here and everything. And he brings he has a bobcat he brought over. So we're sitting around, and I looked over, and I was going to tell him about his trap being a and it's gone. And I go over and I look on the floor, and here's this rat in it. So I dispose of the rat, and I reset it again on that same shelf, and that's where I caught Donette last night.
Really? On the one you didn't think worked?
Yeah. it was just kind of a weird thing because he showed up yesterday, and I was gonna point, you know, I was gonna grab the and give it back to him. It's a worthless piece of shit, you know. It wasn't there. It was on the floor with a rat in it. So it was like karma or something.
Oh, I have a correction to offer. Steve from Georgistan has pointed it out. That was not Pablo Cruz, Baby Come Back. That was Player. Player. Another forgettable band from the 70s. So,
hey, I saw Pablo Cruz live one time.
I did too. They made it all the way to Northwest Alabama to the Flowers Hall Gymnasium of on the campus of the University of North Alabama. I presume they were actually playing their own instruments. One never knows.
Yeah, the concert said it was Pablo Cruz and Jethro Tull and somebody else. I don't know.
Oh, what a bill. Jethro Tull and Pablo Cruz? I bet that
it was it was a college concert on the football field.
I know, but still, that had to be one confused audience.
Very.
Well, this was in like 1978 or 77.
Yeah, thereabouts. Yep, that sounds about right.
So.
Well, let's go around, get some howdies in. Hey, Jason, welcome to the group. Good to see you.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. I've never called in before. I have absolutely nothing to say, but working from the home office today, so I thought, oh, this is a good opportunity. I'll just call in and try it out.
Well, let me publicly thank you for being one of the subscribers and tell you how much we appreciate it.
Sure. You're welcome. Thank you.
And any further fallout from the convention?
That's the California Democratic Party convention. It's was a total clusterfuck. I don't know. Hopefully next year is better. Next year will be the candidate endorsements. But this year it was just, you know, fighting over internal party business. So it was colorful, that's for sure.
So, I mean, you'll stay active and everything.
Yeah, so I got elected I'm one of the here's how it works in California. So there are about 2,000 statewide delegates. About a third of them are appointed. About a third of them are appointed or elected by virtue of being on county central committees. So they're sort of elected. Some of them are appointed. And then about a third of them they call grassroots delegates. These are strictly elected at community meetings, you know, in each of the 80 assembly districts throughout the state of California. And so I'm one of the assembly grassroots delegates, and it was completely swept last January by Bernie-crats. So the Bernie people from each of the assembly districts throughout the state lined up a slate and got all the Bernie supporters to come out and vote for them. So we completely took over that part of the party, but it's still only one third of the party. The other two thirds of it is establishment hacks, you know, apparatchiks and you know, card carrying Democrats that you know, they're more party cheerleaders than they are reformers, and so we're kind of at each other's throats. You know, there's plenty of overlap there, but basically there's the money entrenched, corrupt. I call it corrupt. It's somewhat corrupt, you know, party machine, and then there are the people outside of it that want to turn it on its head and give it back to the people. So lots of torches and pitchforks. So,
but people remain committed as opposed to just walking away and screaming we was had or anything like that?
Well, that's just it. I mean, the establishment folks are upset with the grassroots delegates for being agitators, but my response to them is we're still Democrats. You know, we haven't taken our ball and gone home because the game isn't being played our way. We're the people that are staying and trying to work within the party to change the system as it is today. You know, the two-party system that we have and we're going to have for a while because for a lot of reasons, it's just structurally there and immovable. You know, I know plenty of people that have just bailed out. They've, you know, gone and registered green, or they've, just registered with no party affiliation, or they've dropped out of politics altogether. You know, the sparkle fart powered progressive purity ponies, you know, they're the progressive utopians that, that aren't willing to work with the Democratic Party as it is. So,
and don't have any stomach for the hard work of a long struggle,
for the long game. That's right. You know, so, as I see it, even though, you know, a lot of the Bernie-crats, are in the party agitating and being a bit rowdy, they're still the team players.
I mean, and that's where I come down, Jason. Good for them. Stay in, fight.
Yep.
You know, absolutely. if it's worth hollering about, it's worth fighting about.
That's right. That's right. But you know, but there's a lot of there's a lot of money in the party and a lot of special interests you know, they're milking it the way it is right now. The status quo is what they want, and it's not a very democratic party. You know, it's throughout the system that we have, you know, basically your voice, your vote is proportional to your net worth. And, you know, we're trying to change that. You know, we'd like to get back to one person, one vote. Not that we ever really had that, but, you know, we were closer to it, I think.
Yeah, aspirational, not operational, just like democracy.
It's aspirational, right. I mean, I'm not naive about that, but, you know, we'd like to move a little bit more toward,
I mean, the sort of the same thing happened here in West Virginia last June. You know, we passed the single most progressive Democratic platform the state has ever seen. And then simply because the leadership of the party is a cult of personality for Joe Manchin, they simply ignored it. And the people who passed that platform didn't have the stroke to get out the vote, or didn't do the hard work to get out the vote to help make that a reality.
Right.
I mean, there are, it's not a puzzle with one piece, you know?
No, it's a very complex puzzle, and there are a lot of competing interests, but I think everyone is cognizant of the fact that we're all eating out of the same pot, and that the enemy across the aisle is our enemy. So they truly are. But then we do have, you know, the Manchins and the McCaskills and the Feinsteins in the party that are not sure what to do about them.
Well, sure. You kind of opened the door. And look, let's be clear where this Friday on the Front Porch conversation is concerned. You know, it's not just a series of one-on-one conversations. It's for people to jump in as they wish. But you've opened the door. You mentioned Joe Manchin, who I think I'm pretty well on record as making clear makes me physically ill. The fact that he supported Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III for Attorney General was bad enough. Now the man has been proven to be an outright liar, and Manchin hasn't withdrawn his endorsement. He has the morals of he's got the morals of a remora. But that having been said, we've got this cockamamie campaign going in West Virginia now to primary him, and it's just a con. That's all it is. It's a con being run out of a, no offense, Californians, it's a con being run out of a post office box at the office of a notary public somewhere in Los Angeles. By people who don't know West Virginia, West Virginia's people, West Virginia's politics, or anything else, except how to make money.
Let me offer a little counterpoint. And we discussed this online a little bit on Facebook, but it's like, if no one's ever going to primary somebody like Joe Manchin, when does it ever happen? You know what I mean? It's like, I understand what you're saying. It's completely unrealistic given the political landscape and the makeup of West Virginia. You know, and I understand that, you know, some of us out here on the left coast live in a little bit of a bubble. I spend enough time with my job working outside the bubble in Idaho, Utah, central Pennsylvania. You know, I travel around quite a bit. So even though I live here, I understand what you're facing. I spend enough time with the Bubbas, talking to them and just biting my lip most of the time. But still, I mean, when did they ever get challenged? You know, when...
No,
I understand what you're saying, and it's completely pragmatic. But on the other hand, somebody's got to stand up to it at some point, and why not now? You know what I mean? I guess I'm kind of on the fence. I'm ambivalent.
I don't disagree with a blessed word you said, Jason. And by saying blessed word, I'm not getting cantankerous. I don't disagree with anything you say, but. At some point, when is primarying somebody not primarying somebody? When is it not even what it purports to be? When is it just? If somebody to answer your question honestly from my perspective, Joe Manchin will get primaried when there is somebody competent to primary him. Now, we have good, competent, experienced, progressive politicians in this state. Not a lot of them, but some.
So how do you get one of them to put up a credible campaign and make a credible run at it? How does that happen?
Well,
Most of them are part of the party machinery already. They're scared. Scared to do it.
They might be scared, or they might feel like they're doing... I mean, I do like, especially where progressives are concerned, I like to presume goodwill. And we've got a couple of good progressives who might be biding their time until they can be well enough known that they can build a statewide base. But there's a skill set that goes with being a candidate and a skill set that goes with being an office holder. Sure. I mean, we can look at the two candidates for the recent recent presidential elections as an example of having one and not having the other. For instance, Hillary Clinton profoundly lacked the skill set of a good candidate. She had all the notwithstanding any objections people might have about this, that, or the other policy provisions. She had the skill set to be president, okay? But she did not have the skill set to be a candidate. Trump, on the other hand, being a carnival barker, had the skill set to be a candidate. He has shown us, obviously, that he does not have the skill set to be president. And so you've got to have the combination of both things in order to succeed. And, you know, my point here, Jason, is that the purpose of primarying somebody is to win. And if you don't have someone who can do that...
Yeah.
Then
I see your point.
Then what are you doing?
Right. I see your point. I agree with that.
And I'll take it one step further and say that I'm not much impressed by the idea that the first place that these people came to try to create a fundraising scheme is on our hillbilly backs. And that's, you know, that's just me. I don't know. It really is. It's just me. Other people might adopt what I say, but I'm certainly not speaking for anyone but myself in saying that.
Right.
And ultimately what it comes down to
is a really, really odious decision in November. Because this primary, because, you know, you mentioned the machine politics in California. Well, in a little state like West Virginia, Joe Manchin, the Democratic Party, since Joe Manchin became governor of the state, has been transformed into nothing more than a cult of personality for Joe Manchin. During the time that it has been transformed into such a cult of personality, we have lost the Secretary of State. We have lost the Attorney General. We have lost the Agriculture Commissioner. We've lost seats on the Supreme the state Supreme Court. We've lost the House. We've lost the Senate. We have lost majorities in a wide variety of county commissions. We've lost everything except Joe Manchin. So that tells you that the machine is not going to be tolerant of a an amateur candidate. I'm going to interrupt for a minute. Note, apparently Billable Rick has to bug out for a hot date, and I want to hear from him before we go.
You, should I start, Bob?
Jump, go.
Yeah, I don't have to bug out for probably another hour or so, but I get to see the Cubs-Dodgers game at Dodger Stadium. It starts at 7:10. And I'm going to meet my friend Lori there. We've been dating for probably a couple of weeks now. She actually attended UCLA Law School. She was a first-year student when I was a third-year student. We don't remember each other. And it turns out that we also went to the same church briefly in La Crescenta. She lives in La Crescenta. and just all these commonalities. She grew up in Illinois. I grew up in Illinois. She's from Rockford. I grew up in a suburb of Chicago, Hazelcrest, and we just have a real Midwestern way of looking at things. So it's really been very interesting. I met her through the dating site. So
you just sit on the pier at Malibu and chew on a hay straw and think of the heartland.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, no, we're getting along pretty good, and then she's got this beautiful voice. I call it a dulcet voice, just very soothing. And it turns out that she actually also sang in the church choir, you know. And I don't remember her from the church necessarily. Maybe I do with her voice. I don't know, but. Just a very beautiful voice, you know, very easy to be with. So, and she finds it the same way with me. So it's working out really well.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know if you were listening during the week, but I did want to let you know that Brain is mad at you, too.
Brain, what happened there? I didn't really catch that all your shows this week. Pray tell.
Well, I mean, it's just...
Am I a neoliberal? Is that it?
Oh yeah, you're definitely a neoliberal shill. Yeah.
Any other kind of neos that he called us or not?
Well, you know.
How about just Neo, like the character in The Matrix?
Let's see. Brain keeps telling me that he and I are going to debate. He says, I think it will feel great to clean your clock because I am much smarter than you and that neoliberal shill, Billable Rick.
Oh, my gosh.
Don't laugh at his mighty sword. Why do they always laugh at Brain's mighty sword?
Is this guy even real, Bob?
Beats me. I just answer the
emails. Is this like satire?
I just answer the emails.
Okay. Is he really a writer for The Onion?
No, not near sharp enough to write for The Onion.
Okay, that's true.
Yeah, I'm guessing. I'd like to think that this is maybe one of the writing staff for Bill Maher having a bit of fun, but the writing's even. I mean, this is some low level stuff.
So is he an official? Is he a card carrying member of the Sparkle Fart?
Sparkle Fart Powered Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade?
There you go. Yeah.
It's hard to say. I mean, he claims to have voted for Trump.
Well, maybe he's
a. You had to vote for Stein to be a sparkle fart.
Not necessarily.
Well, no, there are some sparkle farters who voted for Trump.
Probably as a protest against the devil.
Well, after all, Jill did say that it would be better for us to have Trump than to have Clinton.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I don't know where these people come from, you know. As far as cleaning their clocks, I think they need to, you know, I would recommend that they get some colonoscopies first here before they start talking about wanting to clean people's clocks, because they seem to be, from what I can see, Bob.
Well, that's that you perform a colonoscopy to perform a dental exam, too, considering where their heads are. But, you know, it's too easy. It's too easy. Don't just put them up. Don't just toss them up there and expect me to LeBron at home every time. I mean, goddamn, really?
Well, yeah, that's not fair, is it?
and Rick, you can't do it for me if you're full of shit.
Well, I know that. Yeah.
You have to take the flush.
Yeah, because the steel eel doesn't have windshield wipers on the lens.
Oh. is the steel eel neoliberal as well? I got a really strange and funny story.
Yes.
It's called SF Saloon. It dates like the 1930s or something. It's an old building. It's got a great bar and so forth. So anyway, I was watching a game with a buddy of mine. The Cubs and Giants were playing this past week, and because of the Cubs 3 out of 4 against the Giants, they're now in first place by half a game, which is good for me. Oh, Lori's a sports fan as well, by the way, a Cub fan. But my buddy Howard and I were sitting watching the game, and all of a sudden this beautiful young, you know, tall blonde lady comes in and acts like, you know, she's like, you know, very friendly. So I say, here, have a seat, sit down. And so my buddy Howard and I are just sitting there, and then Howard like leaves because, you know, she seems to be kind of interested in me. And then once Howard left, she started like giving me this rap about how she has a 7-year-old son. She signed a talent contract with him. He's being held hostage by the by a babysitter who refuses to tell her where the boy is. And she needs $1,000 to hire an attorney to get her boy back. I mean, this went on for like about an hour or longer. And she basically said she's a Ukrainian lady, and she's a model as well. You know, she showed me some pictures of what she, you know, her modeling and so forth. She said, "I want to earn some money. I need to make $1,000 now. How do I make $1,000?" And so I basically tell her, "Look, you know, there's illegal ways to make money, but I don't think, you know, you want to do that." You know. And I said, well, maybe, you know, my boss has a law practice. Maybe you could work for him for like a week or so. And she said, no, I need to make the money right now. I need to make the money to pay an attorney so that so I can get my boy back and so forth. And, you know, I said, well, you know, 2 hours of time is not really going to, you know, get much with an attorney. I mean, you know, that's what it costs for 2 hours of my time.
I'm just curious, Billable Rick. Speaking of which, yeah. I mean, and this is outside your bailiwick.
Yeah.
But what's a divorce retainer go for out there where you are? No, Agnes and I aren't getting divorced.
Probably $7,500, $10,000, something like that. Yeah.
Wow. Divorce retainer back here, 7 large.
Okay, well, maybe it's more than Bob. It depends. I mean, if it's contested, you know. And so this woman, to continue the story, if I may, she had all sorts of, her story didn't really hold up. I said, well, have you called the police? Have you called the FBI? What's going on? And she said, I was just with them. And they said, because I don't have a U.S. passport, they can't do anything. I said, well, are you a U.S. citizen? She said, yeah, I don't have my paperwork to prove it, though.
Oops.
And, you know, so it's sort of like, you know, she said, how do I make money? I see all these people driving around in nice cars, you know, they cost $50,000 and,
You carried that conversation well past where it should have, where you should have just, yeah, have a nice
I
life.
Know, man. I know, man. I don't know what I was thinking. I ended up giving her a ride back to her place in Venice. Actually, not her place. I bought her a meal. I gave her a ride back to, like, Venice, like this store where they made, like, tacos and stuff or burritos. And she didn't want me to drop her off at her house because she said people had taken advantage of her and had, you know, done bad things. She trusted them and they... You know, she didn't want me to know where she lived. And
Jesus, you know, if you'd taken her home, she would have. You would. The place would have been cleaned out by morning.
Well, yeah. The place apparently had no bed. It had no bed. She just slept on the floor. She said, "I need money to buy a bed. I need money to get my boy back. I need this. I need that." And she also said that she'd been in court earlier in the day. So I don't know. Maybe she had her parental rights taken away because she's.
No. It's all a con. There's no kid.
Okay. Well, she showed me a picture of the kid, but maybe there is no kid. Yeah. Yeah.
Rick,
yeah.
There's this thing, and you're soaking in it right now, called the internet. There's all kinds of pictures of kids on the internet.
Okay, that's true.
Sometimes you can just buy a new wallet and get a free picture of a family in it.
That's true. Oh, man.
It's my old family in Ukraine.
Perfect family.
Yeah. And there's also this dating site with mainly Ukrainian and Russian women called Victoria's Heart or something like that.
I don't know. Wouldn't know.
Anastasia Date.
There's that, too. Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, her name was Daria, and her boy was... She gave him the last name of Bellagio, Dylan Bellagio.
You know, we probably want to keep that information sub rosa. Too bad I'm not running the 2-minute delay right now. I could just disappear that.
Oh, well. Okay. Yeah. But anyway, I mean, I think it's a made-up name, and, you know.
You mean kind of like Brain?
Yeah, right. Like Brain, yes, exactly. So I'll just sit and listen here for a little while. I'm going to check on the traffic here because it'll probably take me an hour to get to the stadium. I'm going to meet Lori there. She's taking an Uber.
It's a tough night on the 608 heading to the 9 and 4, 13, 16. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and by the way, she and her singing group are going to be singing the Star Spangled Banner on Sunday afternoon at the minor league game for the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes. So I'll probably, if there's going to be guys in the group, I'll probably.
Do you realize, you know, Rick, that you're there. Making it possible for Wingnuts to stalk you?
Oh, you know, probably not.
I mean, just saying.
Okay. Well, there you go, man. I guess you're probably right. I guess TMI there. So.
No, I'm not barking at you, but you know.
No, I understand. But, you know, yeah, anyway, so, you know, I'll be going to some ball games this weekend and, you know, having fun. So, and a barbecue on Saturday with some friends. So, you know.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. So, go Cubs, and I'll just listen in here for a while, okay?
Well, chime in if the mood strikes you. Let's check in with Steve from Georgia, Stan. Hey, Steve. You've been way too quiet, Steve. Steve?
Must have fell asleep.
Bob.
Steve.
Baby, come back.
Player, how could I confuse their body of work with that of Pablo Cruz? I feel like such a ninny.
I knew you were going to call on me next, and I posted a big BRB in the chat room, and I posted it in the Skype room, and you called on me anyhow, so...
Well, I mean, it was your turn.
Oh, okay. Well, I appreciate it. I'm not complaining. When are we going to... I'm canceling my vacation to Montana. How about you? I've had it. I'm not going there.
Well, you know, I was playing some Frank Zappa last night, and I was thinking... I
thought you were coming to California.
With an aching in his heart, yes.
It's a joke, Sparky. Who the hell vacations to Montana?
No, a lot of people.
Montana's
$9.8 billion a year at Glacier National Park alone.
Really?
Better get there quick before the glaciers are gone.
But we're just reinforces. It kind of put me in a depressed state today. When all this went down Wednesday, did I or did I not text you, Bob, Wednesday night, saying, this SOB, he's going to win anyhow?
Well, yeah, everybody knew that.
And even you said, especially if he gets convicted of a crime, and, you know, it's just...
And for all the... And for, let me go ahead and take out my little... My little straight pin and pop the balloon. People are saying, well, you know, at least the race was a lot closer than it should have been. Dude, the third party candidate was a libertarian, okay? If you take the margin of victory for John Forte and you add in the libertarian, he lost by 12 points.
Well, I'm of the opinion he could have held a campaign rally, peed on the crowd and farted in the mic, and he would have still won. That's how ignorant people are getting to be nowadays.
Oh, did you hear the audio from his victory celebration last night?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I heard him with that mock apology. Yeah.
Well, no, it's not so much what he said. It's the audience response. Hold on, let me see if I can
dig that up. Oh, they were cheering him on.
No. It was specific.
Is this what we've devolved to? A professional wrestling mentality?
No. Because it's not just...
Flush Flimball said, oh, we want a real man. That's thing in Montana just...
Right.
Reaffirms it.
Right, because Ben Jacobs became a surrogate pussy for Rob Quist. And I'm sorry to use that word. I apologize for it, but I'm just okay. I'm talking like they talk. Ben Jacobs was played as a wimp for complaining about a guy trying to strangle him to death.
How would we like it if a freelance reporter went over to Britain and he got strangled for asking a relevant political question? How would that make us all feel?
Well, it's not about how we feel. It's about, you know, what you can get away with. Okay, I've got the audio here, and y'all can hear it.
Please,
everybody
please
can hear it. There's and once you hear it, I think you'll hear what it was that I heard, because it's not necessarily what Jen Forte says. It's the response.
We forgive you.
And the response is the key to his success. Without a doubt. And so as soon as this loads, we'll hear it.
Last night, I learned a lesson. And no, please. I need to share something from my
heart.
Hear
the laughing?
And I just ask you to bear with me. And when you make a mistake, you have to own up to it. That's the Montana way.
Amen,
brother. Last night,
brother,
I made a mistake. And
more
I
laughing.
Took an action that I can't take back. And I'm not proud of what happened. I should not have responded in the way that I did. And for that, I'm sorry.
And you're forgiven.
Please.
How many times on this program have you heard me use the phrase, have you heard me say, Republicans can get away with anything they want to do as long as they claim Christianity, because... Because the simpletons will respond, he's not perfect, just forgiven.
Well, we touched on this last night, Bob, but it's worth reiterating. Let's flip the scenario. What if this was, happened to a Democrat, would have choked somebody, body slammed them, souffleced them, whatever. They would have been howling at the moon. If
yes,
Nancy
and they
Pelosi
would have deserved every bit of it because they weren't Christians, they were heathens, and they weren't forgiven. Right. Because they didn't have a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ.
But they would have had it the moon if Nancy Pelosi would have sat him. This guy's going to get seated. Paul Ryan already said, I'm going to seat him. Do you think that Nancy Pelosi, if the situation was flipped, could have got away with seating a thug that just 24 hours ago, 48, whenever he's getting sworn in, body slammed somebody?
Well, it's a hard question, Steve, because generally speaking, a progressive, a liberal, even a neoliberal shill isn't going to do that. So it's kind of hard to talk about. Now, is there an upside? They got to wear this albatross around their neck till 2018.
Whether, the whole thing just sickened me.
Whether that makes any difference, I don't know. I know that I know, for instance, that Squint is out there proclaiming that the Republicans are going to get killed in 2018 and lose their majority in the House.
What did he say? The fish rots from the head.
Yeah,
that's what Squint said. Yep.
But the thing is, if he's predicting the Republicans are going to lose, I'm willing to go out and put $10 on the Republicans are going to win.
And you will probably win that $10. I mean, this all stems from Trump. Didn't Trump have an affiliation with the WWF at one time? Didn't he shave Vince McMahon's head or something? Or am I?
He hit Vince McMahon over the head with a goddamn folding chair.
And this is what we want as they are elected leaders now. I mean, it's no wonder I drink. I've got to get blood work done Wednesday. And when Trump was elected, I don't know if, well, you hotted up the mic. We all got hammered. And the next day, I was hungover. Trump was still president. And I got such a kind lady doctor. I can hear her now. Oh, Stephen, your liver is a bit stressed. These people are killing me, Bob.
Well, that's why you look at her and you go, duh.
Or I'm killing myself. I should have better sense, but I mean,
I want to return to this this audio just for a minute and make sure everybody hears the audience response.
We forgive you.
And no, please. I need to share something from my heart here, and I just ask you to bear with me. And when you make a mistake, you have to own up to it. That's the Montana way.
Amen.
Last night I made a mistake.
I love the fact that when you make a mistake, you own up to it. That's the Montana way. You know, that's not your liberal California way, and that's not your sissy Massachusetts way. When you make a mistake, you own up to it. No, that's the Montana way. But the fact of the matter is, the guy is very, very carefully admitting guilt without formally admitting guilt, because the earliest he can be admitted to the House, be seated in the House of Representatives, is June 5th, and he's due in court in Montana on June the 6th.
What a coinkydink, huh? But even so, it's just the misdemeanors are they're charging him with. I don't think a misdemeanor precludes you from sitting in the House, does it? Now, I don't know if any of our friends are out there can correct me on that.
No. The House makes its own rules, and it's established, it's constitutional. And if the House rules say so, using the wrong fork with the shrimp can disqualify you from being seated in the House.
So if even if it was a felony, it wouldn't make any difference. They would probably still seat this bastard.
Well, if the majority wants to. It is just naked majority rule.
Look at who they already got.
Well, I mean, yeah.
That's a good point, Duncan.
Look up the history of Darryl Issa. Okay? Never mind the detail. Just look it up. And again, if there was a prosecutor out there with any courage whatsoever, he would review the evidence, or she would review the evidence, and the next term of court, let the grand jury hear it and determine whether or not wrapping your hands around somebody's throat and trying to strangle the life out of them constitutes nothing but a misdemeanor.
It could be construed as attempted murder, couldn't it? I mean, if you play the tape forward, that's
or felonious assault.
But that's what saddens me. We have come to this state now that it doesn't matter. Nothing matters anymore. And you're right. As far as what Morning Blow has to say, you're correct. It's not going to make a damn bit of difference.
Can I weigh in for a second on this legal aspect of this case?
I had a feeling you might. Do.
Yeah, I missed some of what you all were saying, but I know that this this congressman-elect has been charged only with a misdemeanor assault. If he grabbed him around the neck with both hands and body slammed him, I don't know if it was to the floor or against the wall or whatever, and broke his glasses. You know, I would think that would be, you know, felony assault and battery, not just assault, because assault just involves, you know, a threat of, you know,
right, putting someone in fear of receiving an unconsented to touching.
Right. Whereas the unconsented to touching is the battery. If anything, it seems like this DA or whatever has undercharged the case because the guy was, you know, a privileged white millionaire, basically, who was running.
Well, the sheriff undercharged it. And the sheriff is, we should note, a $250 donor to the Gianforte campaign.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me that there's a slight conflict of interest, not a slight, a major conflict of interest. And I think it needs to be, you know, the case needs to be assigned to, let's say, somebody with the state of Montana, like the attorney general's office or something like that. You know, I mean, I think that's the next thing that has to happen in the case. I don't know if it will now that the guy's been, you know, elected, you know.
Yeah. And by the way, Ron in Raleigh points out, hey, isn't this wanker from New Jersey? What the hell does he know about the Montana way? And that's true. He's not from around there, as we say around here. He just had enough money to buy a big spread in Montana and then buy himself a congressional seat. By the way, Steve? Ron,
yes, sir.
Ron is hereby putting you on notice. You engaged in verbal gimmick infringement. When you said Bob, Bob, and Ron noted, Steve is hereby enjoined.
I don't know what that means, but it's funny.
Well, it means if you Bob again, you're going to have a big problem with Ron and Raleigh. Because that is his gimmick. You can Bob, but you can't Bob.
All apologies to Ron and Raleigh. I didn't mean to steal a shtick. So,
gimmick infringement. We take gimmick infringement pretty damn serious around here.
Bob, is that a horn thing?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's actually a Ron thing.
Okay.
Yeah, Ron's the only one who can use Bob.
Hey, did you see that story I posted? By the way.
Which
about
one?
About the multicolored wiener?
Yeah.
I think the more interesting story is actually about Trump wanting aggressively pursuing a U.S. government position in the USSR during the 1980s to basically end the nuclear arms race. You know? Let me just summarize this here, since it's probably easier than looking at the article. In the mid-80s, Trump, he was buddies with Reagan, and he tried to get a special position with the, you know, to negotiate with Gorbachev a nuclear arms reduction agreement. And this came to light, I guess, because a Boston area cardiologist named Bernard Lone, who actually invented a defibrillator and shared the 85 Nobel Peace Prize with a top Soviet physician, and who actually had met Gorbachev, was contacted by Trump. You know, Trump basically said, hey, I hear you met with Gorbachev and you had a long interview with him and you're a doctor, so you have a good assessment of who he is. And he asked, well, what do you want to know? And Trump said, I intend to call my good friend Ronnie to make me a plenipotentiary ambassador for the U.S. with Gorbachev. And so,
well, we know the megalomania has been there for a while.
Yeah, exactly. And the good doctor said, those are the actual words he used. He said he'd go to Moscow and he'd sit down with Gorbachev. And then he took his thumb and hit the desk, and he said, quote, and within 1 hour, the Cold War would be over, exclamation mark. The doctor sat there dumbfounded and asked himself, who is this self-inflated individual, is he or what? And the White House did not respond to a request for comment. So some things haven't changed. He never got the job, but he did meet Gorbachev, I think, in 1986, and then he also met him at a state dinner that Reagan had for Gorbachev in 1987. But, yeah, I mean, the guy is like, you know, he was talking to Gorbachev about wanting to build a, you know, a Trump Tower in Moscow and all that crap back in, like, 88 or something like that. And nothing ever came of that. So he's like, had a hard-on for the Russians, like, for over 30 years now, you know? So, anyway, that's the essence of the story.
Well, and even more fascinating, there is now apparently going to be a group of 2 a.m. Twitter nanny lawyers. They're lawyering up in the White House. I don't know if you've run across this or not, but there's apparently going to be a group of lawyers whose job is to sit there and make sure that Comrade Kumquat doesn't accidentally twoop out an admission of guilt while he's sitting on the throne at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Wow! So this is like around the clock adult supervision, essentially, because he's a man child.
You're getting close to the heart of it. I think it constitutes round-the-clock adult daycare.
Yeah, right.
And I don't know if you noticed, but when he landed in Sicily, Melanoma finally held his hand.
No, I didn't see that.
She finally held his hand, and of course we know that he is notorious for having a fear of slopes and stairs.
Yeah, yeah.
So he could be in the middle of a bad one at this point.
Wow.
And some of that, and that's pure speculation, I acknowledge that. But some of that is borne out by the things that are being said at the G7, not by him, but by his economic advisors. You know, right before I came to the group, I was talking about that piece that Mike in Cascadia turned me on to from Paul Krugman this morning, in which he uttered the words, coal isn't coming back, when, of course, coal isn't gone. Well, it is presumed, and this is the fig leaf, I personally think it's bullshit. I think most West Virginians know that the coal industry isn't coming back. The coal, and by coming back, when I use the phrase, I mean it's never going to provide the levels of employment that the coal industry once provided in this state. Simply because the mechanization involved has reduced the need for human labor. And I think back to Snork's discussion of things like self-driving trucks and and self-driving bulldozers, or remote-operated ones. Well, it's presumed that West Virginians voted the way they did for Trump because he promised he was going to bring back Coe. I personally think that is a bullshit veneer that they voted for him as an act of pure unmitigated white lash. They couldn't vote for Hillary. See, that's the funny thing. In 2008, Hillary won big in the Democratic primary here, even though she'd already lost. She won big because the Democrats here voted in the Democratic primary for her because, and they were interviewed, and one said, "I just don't think we're ready for one of those in the White House." And by one of those, you know, she meant one of those. And so I personally think that the coal thing is a fig leaf for just pure 200-proof unmitigated racism that obtains around here, 93% white West Virginia, you know? That having been said, there's all that coal bullshit during the campaign. So enter the head of Trump's Council of Economic Advisors, a guy named Gary Cohn, C-O-H-N. He was interviewed aboard Air Force One on Thursday about the Paris Climate Accords and about things like coal. And in the interview, he said, "Make that much sense anymore." Now, this is the chairman of Economic Advisors. Because he's the chair of the director of the Trump National Economic Council. We've created in the United States, we can be a manufacturing powerhouse and still be environmentally friendly. And of course, everything he's saying is in line with what all the major, it's directly in contravention to everything that Trump here in Appalachistan. And the fact that Cohn feels like he can say that in an on-the-record interview says to me, and maybe I'm wrong, it says to me that Trump isn't that much in charge. Then there's the other side of it, and this interview is from the Associated Press, or this article is from the Associated Press. European leaders have talked to Trump, and now his views on climate change are quote-unquote evolving, according to Cohn. Cohn said he feels much more knowledgeable on the topic today. He came here to learn. He came here to get smarter. And that goes back to what has been said time and again about Trump, namely, he parrots the words of the last person who talked to him. So French President Emmanuel Macron, who refused to have his arm jerked out of its socket, talked to him on Thursday in Brussels. Cardinal Secretary of State Pietro Parolin at the Vatican laid into him about not coming, getting out of the Paris Accord. And they all leaned on him in Brussels. And German Chancellor Angela Merkel said, "We put forward very many arguments to, you know, in the way of the U.S. staying in the agreement." So he's going to have round-the-clock daycare, and his economic advisor is saying coal doesn't make much sense. You know, you got to kind of wonder when the West Virginia Coal Association is going to start printing those Trump war on coal signs for Trumpanzees to put in their yards. You know? Am I talking to myself?
or not.
Oh,
I don't think.
No, you were talking.
Okay, I just wanted. I just wanted to make sure because I was seeing a shit ton of buffering going on over there. I thought I might have lost y'all too.
No, we heard you fine, Bob. I don't see that happening with the coal industry because, you know, he's like, you know, he's a white guy.
Because he's not black. Exactly.
He's not black, and he ain't a woman. So,
and
so
he's not a woman, and he's not, a woman who worked for the black guy.
There you go. That's right. And he's not with Goldman Sachs.
Even though a bunch of his cabinet is.
Or Pizzagate. You know?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Hey, I do need to add this in. At 15 minutes past the hour, we started the evening with $277 to raise. I thought it wouldn't be much of a problem. Turns out it is. We got 44 minutes left in the program, and we're still at $277. So if folks feel so inclined, it would be nice to not go into Moran Monday with a $477 hole and sweat the 3 days ending the month. So, I mean, that's just there.
Bob.
Okay, you have not infringed on the
camera. I'm just trying to stick with the program here, Duncan.
Just say Bob one word.
I was just trying to be funny. Levity, my friend, okay. Levity. Bob, did you see where Trump pushed out an ambassador or something today to get his mug in a picture?
Oh, no, that was in Brussels. Yeah, he elbowed the prime minister of, what was it, Montenegro?
Okay. I mean, how humiliating. This guy can't even go on a road trip without just embarrassing the shit out of us. If I was traveling overseas, I'd tell folks I was from Canada or something.
Yes, Barky?
The thing your Spiegel put out on him. Oh, man, that editorial. Something else.
Yeah, the Germans are evil, very evil.
No, but they just talked about how unqualified he was and everything. I read it this morning.
Oh, that speech he gave to the G7? Jesus. We just need to keep him contained in Mar-a-Lago or something. Keep him away.
When you see him in videos and his hair is flopping up and down in the breeze,
they're losers.
You're just looking at that and you're going, what is going on there?
Well, are we comfortable saying that he is mad as a March hare?
I am.
I'll take the Hank Hode road. That boy ain't right. Yep. He's a fry short of a happy meal somewhere, and I don't know how the hell we elected him president. He attracted a certain crowd that was just drawn to him by hatred of Barack Obama. It's the only thing that I can think of that makes any logical sense.
Oh, but did Berlin, Barack Obama in Berlin, did that lift your spirits up?
Oh, of course it did. Yeah, I mean,
when I saw the size of that crowd, it was bigger than Trump's inauguration.
It was off the page huge. And you know that it's got to be like poking him with a stick. Boink, 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 boink. And I wonder if he'll have any reaction to it. Oh, it's fake media.
I just enjoyed listening to him. I thought, geez, somebody highly intelligent that can actually speak.
It made you long for the good old days, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Every time I hear him speak. Yeah.
Why do they put up with it? I mean, looking at that guy get pushed aside from Macedonia or Moldova or wherever it was, I just couldn't tolerate that. I pushed him back.
Well, they had their moments when they were off to the side and he was speaking and they couldn't keep their face straight, and they kind of almost wanted to laugh. Because
I think he steps out front, and then he's
straight to Patel. Still doesn't know how NATO works.
What a prick. He's just our national shame. It's just embarrassing. I didn't vote for him, but I still feel ashamed.
I didn't either. And this Montana thing is just piling on the shame. I mean, we have devolved to such a very dark place that I never thought I would see in my lifetime.
Well, let me just try to cushion the blow a little bit then. It's May 2017. Let's see, June. 17 months from now, after having been told repeatedly that, the Republicans in the House are going to lose their majority, they're going to get their clock cleaned, they're going to, Scarborough will be saying that for 17 months. And after saying that for 17 months, the Republicans are going to retain their majority in the Senate, because it's not much of a stretch to do that, and in the House.
You're just a nugget of joy, Bob.
Little ray of sunshine. No damn doubt about it.
And do you think impeachment's off the table?
Well, until such time as the House is in somebody besides these freaks' hands, yeah.
Yeah.
And so Bob, is a 25th Amendment commission.
Yeah, Bob.
This is Bob Buzzkill Kincaid.
That's me.
I disagree with Bob's analysis. No, let's kill the lawyers for. No, wait, I'm a lawyer. I better be careful there. I think from a historical standpoint, all the Democrats need is they need to swing like 24 House seats from Republican to Democratic. And typically in I'll call it congressional elections as opposed to midterm elections, because, all elections are important, okay? So in the upcoming congressional elections of 2018, when the party in power in the White House typically loses about, 30 or more seats, maybe 35. So I think it's actually quite likely that just based on that, the Republicans are going to lose a considerable number of seats, especially if if his approval ratings stay in the 30s like they are now. They're going to have to somehow gin up some legislative accomplishments in order for them to prevent a Democratic takeover of the House, even though it's gerrymandered like crazy. Just from a historical standpoint of, the party in power in the White House losing seats, especially when you got an unpopular president. So, I think you're right on the Senate, Bob. I don't think there's much of a chance of the Democrats getting it back. In fact, they're going to lose ground probably because they have a lot more seats that are up for contest that are in Democratic hands than are Republican hands right now. But I think the House, there's a real legitimate shot. It might be 50-50. It might be 60-40 chance for the Democrats to take it over. But, I don't know. I'd like to be a little more hopeful that there's a shot.
You want to put your money where your mouth is? You want to put a fin on it?
Yeah, I'll bet you a beer when you come out to L.A., Bob.
I was just going to go straight up. Abe Lincoln, $5.
Okay, we'll do $5. Okay. Okay, you all heard $5.
Heard and done. And Rick, I don't want to bring you down, but if you're looking at this congressional race in Georgia, Ossoff versus Handel is a bellwether. Don't.
Is Ossoff going to lose?
Yes, I predict that he will. And maybe I'm jaded and cynical now, but yes, I predict that he will lose and Handel will win, because these people would rather vote for a dirty rag than go in and vote for a Democrat.
Because he don't love the fetuses.
Exactly.
There you go.
You'll vote for your dead rat.
Dirty rag. Or Duncan's dead rat. Either one, yeah.
Well, let's put the dead rat up for Republicans.
Well, no, I mean, that was going to be the nature of my inquiry. Where are these seats going to come from? I mean,
Devin Nunes has proven himself to be a complete and utter fuckwit.
Yeah.
He's not going to lose his seat in liberal California. Well, if Californians can't even pull together enough to throw out the likes of him.
Well, that part of California is a whole lot more like Alabama than it is California, Bob. Okay.
Yeah, but it's still in California, and there's a shit ton of money that can be poured into changing that election.
Well, you know, I'm not sure, you know, I would think that there is going to be a candidate to challenge that guy because he's obviously, you know, dumber than a doornail. And, you know, and he's,
yeah,
he's
there
corrupt.
Already is. There's already What's someone that? In the race. There's already someone in the race.
Okay. Are there any good?
No, he's like a mayor or a small town
okay.
guy. Probably not.
Okay. Well, you never know.
And that goes to the fact, and I think Jason just confirmed this, we have a thin bench, which kind of goes back to what Jason and I were talking about at the beginning of the program.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have people who are ready to move into these positions, and you know, you do that by having people who participate in the legislative process and move up.
Right.
We don't have that. Jason, just a second, Rick. I'm sorry. Just to point up what I was saying about this West Virginia primary and Joe Manchin thing.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the people who's going to run against Joe Manchin from the Republican side is my congressman, Evan Jenkins. So that creates an open congressional seat in my congressional district, which also happens to be the same congressional district where the person primarying Joe Manchin is from. Now, you're a political noob. You don't have a snowball's chance in hell of beating Joe Manchin in a primary. But the Democratic primary is going to be wide open for this congressional seat. And you're going to be facing a non-incumbent Republican. Which makes more sense? Primarying Joe Manchin with that candidate or trying to win an open House seat?
An open House seat, but they're doing the reverse, obviously, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, if shit were brains, Bob, the Democratic Party would be, you know, fucking Einsteins.
Well, this isn't the Democratic Party, Rick.
Okay.
This is a multi-level marketing scheme called Justice Dems.
Oh, God.
So, you know, there it is. Let me check in on a couple of emails. Trumpian Peeve from Jack in Shreveport. I know it's a bit frowned upon to pick on appearance-related things, but the way Ivanka bobs up and down when she walks bugs the shit out of me. One of those talk amongst yourselves kind of things. Kelly says everyone sounds like they're in a barrel. That's because you're listening to the 8K stream, and I presume on TuneIn. And it goes back to the buffering problem that we don't seem to be able to even remotely get a handle on.
Yeah, the head on live stream was better. I was listening before we went Skype with the Skype.
And I've seen buffering on both. Mm-hmm. And the funny
That brings us to another topic.
Yes?
Your streaming computer, which you think is the problem.
Well, and I was kind of going to go toward that. Here's the weird thing. Without getting all off in the weeds, because it's kind of hard for people to test it and say, yeah, it's this or no, it's not, because it's a specific, specialized application. When I run a pre-recorded, you know, like the rerun stream that runs when we're not live, it almost never buffers. It's only on live broadcasts that it buffers. Asa tested the head-on.live stream the other night, just playing audio into a microphone, and said
he couldn't get it to buffer to save his to save his soul. So that kind of tells me that, because when I see buffering on the broadcast side of the interface, that's either my bandwidth or bandwidth up at the server, or a connection to the server problem.
Well, don't you have more people towing the bandwidth down at the same time when you're live versus, you know, it's all staggered when they're listening to it afterward?
Well, right? that's absolutely true. But our capacity is far above anything that could be happening right now. I mean, we are theoretically set up for thousands and thousands. And as much as I would like to say there are thousands and thousands, there aren't. I don't know what the exact number is, but it's not tiny. But it should not be sufficient to labor the server, especially since we've got two different servers being hit, Jason. You see what I mean?
I can tell you something weird.
What's that?
That I don't know what's going on. My internet radio, I have a Logitech internet radio that Lottie turned me on to years ago.
Yeah.
It's got 6 presets on it. No matter what preset I hit, the horn logo comes on. I mean, on the little window it's got on it for every preset. And it'll play the preset, but it has the horn logo stuck on it. And I thought, what the hell's going on with my radio?
That's a handy little bug. But to expand upon what you were about to go into, Sparky, I have had communications from a couple of different members of the Horn Family Community Congregation, including yourself, who are saying that it is time to run an equipment fundraiser, and the goal being to replace the streaming computer, the tired old crashes at the drop of a hat production computer. And you hear the crackles and the clicks and the pops? Well, that's the
I've heard them before.
Yeah, that's the ancient mixing board. It sounds like static. And I have received commitments of, and this is exclusive of even talking about the streaming computer. With regard to the production computer and the mixing board, I've received commitments of $2,000. That's not to say we received $2,000, but if we decide to do it, there's a commitment of $2,000 to help make it happen. And so, I think maybe if we think in those terms, if we can make it to the end of May and have fundraising in place, maybe as early as June, start a separate and distinct equipment fundraiser that would replace at least 3 and maybe as many as 4 or 5 pieces of equipment, depending on how people responded. And one other addition, I've talked a lot about crowdfunding campaigns and things like that. Well, we could go that route, but the thing about a crowdfunding campaign is whatever you bring in, the crowdfunding company gets like 7% of it. So as opposed to the 3% that you get just hit with just going through PayPal. So I'm thinking we might be better off just trying to run it within the community and maybe a little bit beyond the community, do some Twitter and Facebook work and stuff like that, and see where it takes us. Because depending on how people responded to it, we could probably make significant leaps in what can happen here. Your thoughts, Sparky?
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to do something else, but it doesn't matter.
So I was going to just
I was
add,
just on the one computer.
Realistically, what do you need?
Separate little idea.
Well, let's deal with the separate idea, and we'll do the other one separately.
Bob, realistically, how much do you think you'll need to make this come into fruition?
Well, hold on, Steve. I want to go back and find out what the separate idea from Sparky was.
Well, it was just like you talked earlier. I mean, people could PayPal me the money, and then I could buy that computer we talked about on Amazon. But then, I mean, you'd have to send my email address out to people if that's what they wanted to put the money into.
Yeah, that.
And I could send it, you know, have it sent right to your address, like I've done shit before.
Right. And well, the one thing. I tried to find the specs on that machine to find if it had, you know, did it have a PCIe X1 or X16 expansion slot or just a PCI expansion slot, and I couldn't find it. And it's going to have a sound card go in it one way or the other. So, you know, I don't.
Well, it's got slots on it. That's all I know. Add-on slot.
Yeah, that's the thing. I couldn't get a clear enough picture on the inside of it to see what they were. But yeah, that's more than enough. That's, as we say in the hunting, in the hunting clubs here, that's more than enough gun as far as the streaming is concerned.
Yeah. Well, that was just my thought. Cause I'd be up for $100 on it. You know, the price was like $450.
Yeah, I don't know what shipping was on it, but
$450.
I would be using my Amazon Prime.
Ah,
and you can have it drop shipped directly to Bob's house.
Yes,
I wouldn't have to.
I had that done before years ago when I bought the foot warmer.
Oh, okay. That way, you're not going from here to there. That's just incurring extra shipping costs.
No, Steve. We've already been down this road before.
All right. I hear you. So you're saying 450 beans ought to get this done then?
Yeah, yeah. For the streaming PC.
But I already got 100 covered on it. So it's only 350. It's up to Bob.
Right, of course. I'm just trying to talk turkey here and put together, you know, what we need to make this right.
So if Sparky's in for 100 on a new streaming PC, then that leaves 350.
Yeah.
And see who wants to do it. Now, as to your previous question, Steve, the two commitments that have been made would basically replace or get close to replacing the production machine, the one that crashes and throws me out of the chat room, and then you send me text messages saying what the hell happened to you. That would replace that and the mixer, and depending on how folks responded, maybe finally change a little bit of the telephony here to make things a little bit more accessible. You know, more than one or two calls at a time. So that's that.
Okay, so the long and short is 350 then. That's what we're talking.
For the streaming PC, yeah.
Okay. And did you need anything above and beyond that?
Well, I mean, we're going to do the streaming PC separately from
first,
the other
okay.
from the rest
all
of
right.
it, and hopefully, depending on how it shakes out, we'll maybe get past the production machine and the mixer, and maybe make a great leap forward. Who knows?
Right. I understand we're not Karnak the Great. We can't see into the future. But this would be a good start, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. And
okay.
If what I can't figure out, and I'll leave it to the computer geniuses out there, Asa says it may just be a matter of the architecture of the software. But what, you know, what I'm seeing here now, the stuff that's interrupting more often than not is on the sound card side of the interface and not the broadcast side. In the past, when it would buffer up and, you know, we were just going to the White Rose server and that was it, and it would buffer up and crash. Well, that would either be a problem with my bandwidth or a problem getting into the server, and I would see that on the broadcast side of the interface. And I know this makes no sense whatsoever. But what I'm seeing over the last month and a half is buffering that's coming from the sound card side, which says that there's something going on in how the sound is getting from the board into the sound card and into the interface. And what Asa tells me is I wouldn't necessarily, the problem with not having a problem playing pre-recorded stuff versus playing a live stream. Asa says the pre-recorded file doesn't require any on-the-fly encoding. Live streaming, however, does require on-the-fly encoding, so it's a bigger workload on the machine.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
And, excellent point.
And what this machine is at this point, and this is why Sparky went and found the machine he did, this is a 32-bit machine with a 3-gig quad-core, old quad-core AMD processor, and 4 gigs of RAM. And while I run the system process monitor and everything during the program just to see what's going on, I see nothing. I mean, it's like there's no load on the CPU at all, and 1 gig of RAM out of 4 is being used. But again, Asa says it may just be the architecture of the software.
But you haven't changed that, have you?
No. And I'm running the latest version.
What version? I assume you're running Windows. What version of Windows?
Yeah, and see, we just buffered up just because back when I built it, going on. It's, you know, it's that old. Just because and quite frankly, some of the software is probably, well, like the software for the sound card is probably orphaned at this, and I got no answers. I mean, I'm just sitting here watching, driving me crazy because it's happening on the sound card side.
Because Windows needs a swap file, it needs to read and write to the drive. You know, especially if the memory, the solid state memory is.
Yeah, it's pretty full, but I cleared out it. Good. Couple of hundred gigs off of it,
okay,
and defragged it and did all of that stuff, but
to
no avail. But that's a valid thought, and I don't know. It's just kind of weird.
Well, there's no buffering on Skype, Bob.
No, there isn't, because Skype is running on a completely different machine. There are
so there's advantages to being in this group on Friday night, you know. And there's no buffering, and we share we can share pictures, and we have a separate chat.
I brought that up hours ago, Duncan. You probably seen it. Join the porch. No buffering.
Yeah, you know, maybe we need to start promoting the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that way.
Because I've had. Years ago, I had 22 people in a group at one time on a different machine, and it worked back in the old days.
Yeah.
When we first started the Hormelor Skype group, and it's Hormelor Skype group is not really doing anything after your show anymore.
Right, because the reason for, well, that was back when Malloy was going to midnight. And so after midnight, it would just kind of carry over on a Friday night.
Yeah, well, 3 hours, yeah. The establishment of the group was totally different days, totally different people.
Yeah.
Hell, I don't think you joined for almost a year.
No, I popped in and out a couple of times, but...
You weren't there at the beginning, I know that.
No, I wasn't. Jesus, and the beginning? How many years, Sparky?
Since 2009.
I thought it went back further than that.
No. That's when... Because I didn't find you till I got laid off.
Okay.
Because of the Great Recession in January 2009, and then I was listening to Malloy, and then I got turned on to you, so I started listening to you, and then there was a Malloy chat room that had a feature that where we could talk, three people could talk to each other. It was strange thing, but it was only there for a while, and that's when it happened. I mean, Tim from LA, Spike from PA, and you know the rest of the original group, Bob Lottie, everybody else. I mean, then we just expanded after that. When Malloy went to a different chat room.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, separate topic, but well worth the mention in the last few minutes here. Last week, Tracy told the story of having been on a game show. And it is apparently out there. I mean, no, it's not apparently out there. It is out there. Everything with a couple of limitations is on YouTube. And just for those of you who would like to see Tracy in 1988, I watched it, and it was exactly as she described it. For those of you who would like to see Tracy on a game show called Wipeout, go to YouTube and look up Wipeout September 12th, 1988, parentheses, Tracy, Carol with an E, and Michael. And it was the first episode, the premiere episode of Peter Tomarkin's Wipeout. And it's from an old videotape or something like that, but it was a delight to watch.
Are you going to give credit to who found it?
Tracy sent it to me. Who did find it?
Oh, damn. I thought you knew.
Well, I did, and now I can't remember.
The guy in Minnesota with the dog.
Oh, Laurel. Yeah. Credit to Laurel.
Yeah, he found it.
Yeah. Laurel heard it and went and found it, and no, it's just cool to watch. And Tracy's got this beautiful red dress. And when she told the story the other night about why she bailed out of the game show, even though she was on the verge of winning, you kind of understand.
But it was pretty cool. They called out her son on that show at the beginning.
Yeah. Because he was a newborn. Or very nearly. Well, not a newborn per se, because his birthday and Agnes and my anniversary is the same day. So he would have been May, June, July, August, you know, 4.5 months old. Yeah.
And I don't know if it was on the after show that I had to watch. while back. We got to hear from Alex.
Yeah, what was that, two Fridays back when he discovered the glories of artichoke hearts on a meatball sub?
Yeah, yeah, damn. There.
Oh, and with with 10 minutes to go in the program, big thanks to Charlene, who just took us down a big hunk to only 177 to go for fundraising for the evening. Thank you, Charlene. If that was supposed to go to the computer fund, let me know, and I will direct it that way. But thank you one way or the other.
Bob, they have to direct it to me.
Yeah, I know, but I can direct it to you.
Okay, if you want. But I just thought...
Well, that saves putting out your email address and all that stuff, so...
Well, I don't care. I trust the Horn family community. I just don't want to put it out over the air.
Right. So, yeah, either way, but no, Charlene just took us down by $100, so thank you, Charlene. So, any weekend plans?
I'm just getting this driveway in. He's supposed to be back here. My friend is a entrepreneur. He runs a bunch of 30 head herd, and today he had to make sure he moved him back to his mountain property today.
I've been watching the weather every day because I've been a weed eating fiend, and the weather has not cooperated. And it got pretty for a little while today, but not long enough. And the monsoon moves back in overnight, and apparently we get monsoon until Tuesday.
Well, I'm just happy the weather got cool again. We had a couple days where it was over right at 100 degrees or 101.
You're up in Red Bluff, right?
Yeah.
It's hot up there. It's so hot. Redding and Red Bluff. That Northern Valley there, that's just a blast for us in the summer. Yeah.
The hottest day I ever spent in Red Bluff was 122 degrees. You know, they modified the welcome to Red Bluff sign one time during the summer, and somebody put on there, "Welcome to hell."
Pretty much.
I used to fry eggs on the sidewalk here as a kid. I kid you not.
Oh, I bet they fried really good on something like sheet metal.
Oh, yeah. I could probably do it. I mean, we've had... I think the hottest it's been since I moved back here from Redding is like 113.
But it's a dry heat.
Oh, yeah, it is. Bob can tell you about that when he was in Las Vegas.
Yeah, that was the damnedest thing I ever experienced. 114 degrees, a bead of sweat comes out, and it's gone before you can wipe it away.
Serious question, Duncan, and we can take this up later. Did they design air conditioning differently, meaning since it's a dry heat, they don't have to pull out any humidity?
Oh, we don't have humidifiers like they have back east because they have basements and shit like that.
I know my thought friend in
New York.
Yeah, you can use evaporative coolers when it's the humidity is low, right? But down in the south or something, you can't evaporate.
Can't do that, right?
Water when the air's already saturated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The place place I rented in Redding had an evaporative cooler.
Right.
But here at the estate, I have a central air conditioning. Thanks, Mom and Dad.
Yeah, Sparky has the estate, and here we have the mansion. And
but
at least we have air conditioning in the studio in the summer, courtesy of chief giver, Queen of the Minions, Carol Baker, when the other one conked out. It's the heat in the winter that gets interesting.
Oh, Bob.
Yes, Sparky.
I'm thinking about a mic. Yeah. Vortex jumping into another space this summer.
Oh, yeah?
That has air conditioning.
Oh, you're going to fold space in?
Yeah, the little room that's on the end of the shop here, the rock shop, has air conditioning.
Well, you know, you might as well put that promotion.
I might clear a space in there.
Yeah, well, you know, you might as well put that promotion to work. I mean, you're a spacing guild master now.
Well, I have three PC towers that I can move wherever I want. Just have, and I mean, the one in the living room is hooked to the HDTV, so I don't want to move it. It's the newest one, and I love it. It works great for streaming movies and stuff. Oh, I wanted to mention, I'm going to start watching. I'm going to finish watching the newest thing on Netflix, War with Brad Pitt. I started watching it last night. I can't think of the whole name.
Oh, I'd seen that promoted. I haven't tried it yet. And with Agnes having been gone over to the grandbabies, I've let American Gods just pile up. We watched the first episode together. And I haven't touched it since. I'm really proud of myself. I'm being a good husband.
Yeah, it's kind of a... It's Argo Goes to War in Afghanistan type of movie. I mean, it's really weird. Have you been watching Fargo?
No.
Oh, with the third season of Fargo. It's strange and shit.
I'm still... And I don't know... Yeah, I guess I did mention it, but I'm still bummed out that Outsiders is gone.
Well, you got to adapt, Bob.
I know, but that just smelled a little bit too much like a message getting quashed because Cole.
Yep. Well, at least it had a 2-year run.
Yeah, and a damned interesting storyline. Well, I guess we got to get out of here. 2 minutes till. Thanks, everybody, for joining in on this Friday on the Front Porch. It's been, as usual, a rousing conversation. Hey, Jason, thanks for popping in for your first time. I hope it won't be your last.
Sure. Thank you.
By the way, just because we worry, anybody heard anything from Snork? I know he's, I think he was having some issues with his dad.
No.
But at any rate, thanks everybody for joining in. Thanks to all of you who spend your precious finite time engaging in whatever method that you and manner that you do in this little ongoing multi-years long conversation. Thank you to everyone who supports this program. Thank you, Charlene, for jumping in and keeping it from being a goose egg this evening. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to Steve from Georgia Stan, our midweek utility pinch-hit prayer meeting moderator in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, to John Fox, to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Podcasts are back at WhiteRoseSociety.org, also at Podbean.com. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Have a great weekend.